Hey y'all. So when it comes to bodies, weight loss is not really something that I'm pursuing right now. But as you know, one of Vanessa's family members has been taking a GLP-1 medication, and it's worked really well for him. So if that is part of your journey, you should check out the Row Body Program. Row provides access to the most popular weight loss shots on the market. Row's partner handles all the insurance paperwork to help get the medication covered. If eligible for medication, patients have access to their provider on demand for any questions. Go to ro.co/infamous. Sign up today and you'll pay just $99 for your first month and $145 a month after that. Medication costs are separate. That's ro.co/infamous.
Campsite Media.
This episode contains descriptions of violence that may be disturbing for some listeners.
One of the wildest nights in spring break history. Folks, I gotta get ready. It's time for Girls Gone Wild. Spring break, live!
Here's something I didn't tell you before from Panama City Beach in 2002. Remember when I was kicked out of the Holiday Inn with Joe Francis? Joe was arrested, I was told to leave, and I schlepped my roller bag over to the shooter's condo, where they stayed up drinking all night and I crashed on a couch. The next day, Joe got sprung. We met on an airstrip in front of his idling private plane.
I was like, is there a box to check for a plane?
Yeah. As soon as he got out of jail, he wanted his pilot to get his Gulfstream ready so we could get the hell out of Panama City. We were on our way to another spring break spot, South Padre Island, Texas. Now, I am going to spare you what happened in South Padre, because it was the exact same shit as before. The shooters, the flashing, the flirting. But I am going to tell you what happened on the plane. Joe told the pilot to go straight up as far as he could go, and then let the plane do a huge arc. A free fall. He wanted to do zero gravity. It's something that pilots have known about forever. By dropping your plane, you can cheat gravity, at least for a few minutes, even though there is a bit of a cost to it.
They call these planes the vomit comets.
No one threw up on Joe's plane, but we all started detaching. And then we were flying around the cabin like astronauts, and straight down the center aisle, there was Joe. He was coming straight at me, doing a somersault. He was weightless. He was free. He was working totally against the laws of gravity. From Campside Media and Sony Music Entertainment, I'm Vanessa Grigoriadis, and this is Infamous. We're on our final episode of our five-part series, Boy Gone Wild. Stay tuned afterward for a special episode. Okay, back to Joe. When I think about the 2000s, at least in terms of pop culture, I think about Joe doing that free-fall somersault on the plane and what he said afterwards. He yelled this. I'm so amped. I'm so amped. And back then, everyone was just so amped all the time. The early 2000s were about big. They were about raunch. They were about the birth of reality shows.
I'm on the Jersey Shore!
I love Guido!
But as crazy as this is to contemplate, there was also this really serious Puritan streak to what was going on. The raunch era was also about how raunch was sort of not okay, about how taking your top off for Girls Gone Wild might be the height of feeling good at that exact moment, but it was something that you should later feel pretty ashamed of. Like, listen to this clip from Jersey Shore.
Michael, go upstairs to your whores.
and have fun.
Angelina is mad because Mike, remember him, the situation, has brought girls back after a night out. So she insults the girls.
There's nothing wrong with what I'm doing. I mean, if a girl's a slut, I mean, she should be abused.
This double standard, this mixed message, was everywhere back then. And it extended to me too. I said earlier that there was this idea back then of two classes of women. The women who were exploited, who generally had very light bank accounts. And the women who exploited them, who went to college, got a good education, made their living producing or analyzing or having something to do with pop culture. I told myself I was an analyst of all this stuff. And in some ways, I was. But in my haste to become successful myself, to become a female Hunter Thompson who got into the seamy side of culture, I did a lot of stuff that I feel pretty weird about today. I want to say one thing about when that Rolling Stone editor took me out to lunch.
A-level restaurant, very like northern Italy, like more like Milan than Naples. And I guess we talked about whatever might interest Rolling Stone's, you know, young male perverted readers.
Talking over spaghetti and Pinot Noir, it wasn't totally out of left field that he wanted me to cover groupies. I had already reported on groupies for the band Poison. Okay, I know that sounds insane. It's a very old band, but they were having a revival. And on another reporting stunt, I had also lived for 24 hours in the first cam dorm in Tampa. I didn't take my clothes off. The owner of the dorm let me shower in the shower that wasn't wired for video. But I still slept there. Like, they gave me my own bedroom. I was in a bed that had cameras trained on it with like 4,000 people watching as I tossed and turned. I was in my early 20s and I was experimenting with everything and I told myself I didn't really care. But wasn't I also being exploited in some way? Wasn't I also being told that my writing was only valuable if it leveraged my status as a young woman? I could say more about that, but, you know, exploitation when you're also being paid to write articles that you choose to write is tough. And in general, this era, the raunch era, was almost like a bat of an eyelash. It was post-9/11, running up to a few years before Obama. By then, gravity was pulling all of us back to Earth. More about that after the break.
I've always struggled with finding time to manage my finances. At the end of a busy week, the last thing I want to do is spend time budgeting all of my expenses or tracking down customer service teams to cancel old subscriptions I no longer use. But now I use Rocket Money, and it does all that for me. Rocket Money is a personal finance app that finds and cancels your unwanted subscriptions, monitors your spending, and helps lower your bills so that you can grow your savings. With Rocket Money, I have full control over my subscriptions and a clear view of my expenses. I can see all my subscriptions in one place, and if I see something I don't want, Rocket Money can help me cancel it with just a few taps. Rocket Money has over 5 million users and has saved a total of $500 million in canceled subscriptions, saving members up to $740 a year when using all of the app's features. Stop wasting money on things you don't use. Cancel your unwanted subscriptions by going to rocketmoney.com/infamous. That's rocketmoney.com/infamous. rocketmoney.com/infamous.
Welcome to True Spies, the podcast that takes you deep inside the greatest secret missions of all time.
Suddenly out of the dark, it's appeared Bin Laden.
You'll meet the people who live life undercover. What do they know? What are their skills? And what would you do in their position?
Vengeance felt good. Seeing these people pay for what they'd done felt righteous.
True Spies from Spyscape Studios, wherever you get your podcasts.
You're listening to Infamous from Campside Media.
So, by about 2008, the raunch era had definitively come to a close. It was slammed back to Earth by gravity. All of us who worked in the space of pop culture and sex in one capacity or another had a problem. A big problem.
The internet is really, really great.
whore porn.
There are millions of people, an estimated about 40 million Americans, who surf pornography online.
These days, porn stars are available 24/7 on the internet.
Porn was suddenly available everywhere for free. And no one cared what you had to say analyzing it. I was getting pretty sick of writing about sex, so I was happy to move on. But it was an enormous problem for Joe Francis. He was still out there talking up a storm, being the big porn impresario. But the shtick was getting old. Here he is talking about a sort of weird incident. Stick with me for a second. The governor of New York at the time, Eliot Spitzer, had been caught with a sex worker, Ashley Dupree. And somehow, it was alleged that Ashley had been on the Girls Gone Wild tapes when she was underage.
I don't understand it. I mean, Eliot Spitzer gets to have sex with her for $4,000 and I got to pay $10 million because we shot some naked pictures. It makes absolutely no sense whatsoever.
You know, her birthday's coming up. Are you going to buy her anything?
I'm actually going to send her a nice assortment of cupcakes with a thank you card for suing me and getting me this press for our Girls Gone Wild magazine.
Get the cream filling. They're fantastic.
I'm sure she's had plenty of the cream.
Terrible.
This guy spent 11 months in jail and pled no contest to child abuse. And he's on national TV making jokes about a woman his company had filmed when she was underage. It's sort of mind-boggling. And if you listen to other stuff from this time, he's still making the same argument about how he deserves to do what he's doing because the rights are in the Constitution. Here's a promotional video that he made. His hair is sort of long, flopping over his ears, and he has a very serious look on his face.
Girls Gone Wild has always been about free expression, which is a right guaranteed by the U.S. Constitution.
As he talks, it's impossible to miss the gigantic American flag hanging behind him.
I've learned the hard way that you can't take your free speech rights for granted. I will never stop fighting for free expression and our right to read, hear, or view whatever we choose.
Now, in America, we believe in second chances. And Joe could have had one. He had a good deal of public support in the late 2000s. I mean, you just heard those TV hosts cackling about cream filling. Not everyone wholeheartedly sympathized with girls who had posed for Girls Gone Wild, at least the ones of age. Here's a take from David Angier, the reporter.
I hate the idea that these women had to go through that, that the worst mistake in their life was now lingering with them. And it was out there for people to see, and you can sympathize with somebody that young making that kind of mistake. But there's another part of you that says, well, what did you expect was going to happen? I mean, the camera was right there, and you're undressing and getting into bed or a shower with another woman. What did you think was going to happen? So you can sympathize with the terrible decision-making, but it's hard to understand how they got themselves there in the first place.
So Joe had the advantage of a bit of the benefit of the doubt. Plus, at this point, he was almost like a visionary. I mean, he had changed the culture so much that the culture had basically rendered him obsolete. Women were willing to be filmed all over the place now. I mean, the internet was awash in nudes. 8 years after those four women sued Girls Gone Wild for filming them when they were minors, they're in court to settle a civil suit on the matter, the Chateau Motel case. I imagine Joe sitting at the bench, jiggling his knees. He's waiting for the court to start. He doesn't have a lawyer by his side, though. He's serving as his own lawyer in front of an all-female jury.
Obviously, there were no daddies on the jury, no men to feel protective of these girls. The girls said that they had been coerced into their participation in Girls Gone Wild. And since then, the damage to their lives had been significant, that some had attempted suicide and there were financial ramifications and that things had just spiraled out of control for them ever since that decision.
In this case, it wasn't really Joe who was on trial. It was the women. At one point, Joe tried to bring up that one of these women had gone on to do porn. The judge ruled that irrelevant. At another point, Joe asked one of the plaintiffs if she was a prostitute. She'd accepted $50 from him after he allegedly forced her to masturbate him in the hotel room. This pretty much sums up how a lot of people thought about consent at the time. Like, it's the girl's fault if something bad happens to her, if she put herself in a bad situation. Never mind if she's underage, too drunk to consent. She saw the cameras. She was in a seedy bar during spring break. What did she expect? The onus is on the woman to always make the right decision. It's never on men not to abuse her. And that kind of thinking, that what men do to women is always the women's fault, is a hop, skip, and a jump from thinking that a girl who wears a revealing outfit is asking for it. Maybe it's not surprising that Joe actually won this civil case, even with an all-female jury. He didn't pay those girls a dime.
The plaintiffs were asking for more than $100 million in damages and punitive costs, and they ended up with zero. When I talked to the jurors, they did not believe that the girls should be enriched for what they saw as voluntary participation in the Girls Gone Wild videos.
All that stuff was just about teenage girls. Who cared about them? The thing that actually got Joe in trouble, it's not with girls. So, you know, it actually matters.
The man who made his multi-millions with these raunchy spring break videos allegedly racked up a seven-figure gambling debt at one of Wynn's casinos.
Billionaire Steve Wynn. I mean, gangster. But, you know, I mean that colloquially. He's not a criminal, only a baller. He's the father of Las Vegas.
France has publicly accused Wynn of deceptive practices at his casinos.
Okay, this is very simple. Joe went to gamble at Wynn's casino. He lost $2 million, and he wouldn't pay it. A normal person would pay. That's how casinos work. You lose, you settle the debt. But not Joe. Joe alleged that when he started to do well, he was plied with wine from Steve Wynn's private wine cellar to keep gambling. According to the Las Vegas Sun, Joe said he met sex workers who said they were Steve Wynn's personal gift to you. But Wynn sued Joe for defamation.
Showdown in Sin City.
That was just the first in a string of lawsuits between the two men, with a lot of high drama. Joe alleged, in a countersuit, that Wynn had emailed music producer Quincy Jones saying Joe should be concerned for his life for dipping out on his tab. Remember, Quincy lived across the street from Joe in Bel Air.
He was gonna hit me in the back of the head with a shovel and bury me in the desert. I was afraid for my life. He made it very clear that he wanted to kill me.
But Steve Wynn wasn't having it.
I certainly never sent any email threatening to kill Mr. Francis.
The dispute deepened.
Hollywood's most buzzed about trial. On one side, Steve Wynn, the Las Vegas hotel and casino magnate. On the other, Girls Gone Wild founder Joe Francis. Francis says Wynn threatened to kill him in an email. Wynn not only says that's false, he's suing Francis for defamation.
This time, Joe lost.
$1 million, $10 million, $3 million.
The verdict read like a ringing bell at the end of a heavyweight fight. Steve Wynn, the Vegas billionaire, has emerged from the latest round not only victorious, but $20 million richer after duking it out in a defamation lawsuit against Girls Gone Wild creator Joe Francis.
It's hard to believe that anybody sitting in that room could come to any other conclusion than Joe Francis is a liar. That Joe Francis is a desperate, out-of-control, vicious guy.
Joe was ordered to pay Wynn $20 million. Several months later, his business filed for bankruptcy.
Joe Francis founded the smutty and very successful Girls Gone Wild empire, which just filed for bankruptcy because Vegas big dog Steve Wynn, one of the 500 richest men on our planet, wants his money.
And when Joe's house in Bel Air went up for grabs, guess who got it? Steve Wynn. More after the break.
Have you ever felt like escaping to your own desert island? Jane Gaskin did exactly that, trading in the family home to begin a new life in the tropics. But she soon discovers that paradise has its secrets. I'm Alice Levine, and this is The Price of Paradise, the island dream that ends in kidnap, corruption, and murder. Wish you were here? Follow The Price of Paradise now, wherever you listen to podcasts.
In the 1970s, John Todd burst onto the evangelical scene with a shocking tale. He claimed to be a former witch, involved in a then-unheard-of secret organization called the Illuminati, and urged Christians to prepare for a violent world takeover.
First of all, the number one weapon in everybody's home should be a 12-gauge pump shotgun.
Hear the amazing story of one of the originators of the modern-day conspiracy theory. From Magnificent Noise and Sony Music Entertainment, this is Cover Up, The Conspiracy Tapes.
You're listening to Infamous from Campside Media.
So I said a lot about the culture and how everybody was exploiting everyone. And then you heard about the ridiculous war between Steve Wynn and Joe Francis. At this point, maybe you even feel a little bad for Joe Francis, sort of like Bubba the Love Sponge did.
Seriously, I mean, Joe, you got so much money and you got so much going for you, but you're always getting into all kinds of problems.
You might think, hey, I haven't heard Joe Francis in a while, in the media or on the radio, anyplace else. This sounds like an old story. But I called up someone in LA who said it's actually an ongoing story.
My name is Christina Carlozzi, recently retired from LAPD.
She was a detective on the west side of LA.
I was working domestic violence table, which could encompass criminal threats, batteries, online threats, things like that. So my boss came to me and said, I have a case for you. She said, this guy, do you know his name? Joe Francis.
Christina had never heard of him.
She said, well, he's kind of a high-profile person in West Los Angeles and Hollywood. So she goes, just be careful. You know, you need to do everything right with this investigation.
And then her boss told her what the case was.
It's a battery with three girls.
Now, battery is kind of like a more serious version of assault. It's an act that inflicts real harm. So Christina reached out to one of the victims. She said she'd gone out with two of her girlfriends, who were sisters.
They wanted to go out to Hollywood to a club, and they were not girls that go to Hollywood. They're really good girls. And that's when one of the girls was approached by Joe Francis. She's an introvert. She wasn't somebody who was out there, like, dancing and doing crazy things. She was just kind of staying close to her sister on the side, and I think that's why maybe he approached her, because she wasn't like a regular Hollywood girl.
They decided to leave the club, but they say Joe appeared again outside.
And then he shows up to the valet in his black SUV Cadillac. He said, hey, you guys need a ride. And they said, oh no, our car is parked two blocks away from the club. And one of the girls, the one that was the smallest, he grabbed her arm and kind of pushed her into the Cadillac.
To be clear, this is Christina's account of events, and Joe has denied much of this story.
So the other two girls said, hey, what are you doing? We're gonna go around the corner. We don't need a ride two blocks. The door started to shut, so then that's when they stopped it and they got in. They're like, okay, we're not gonna let her go. We don't know what's happening. The Cadillac takes off and they start to go down Hollywood Boulevard and going in an opposite direction of where their vehicle was. And that's when one of the girls said, hey, you know, we're not, what are you doing? We need to get out. And then he said, well, don't you know who I am? I mean, they're 21, 22. I mean, I don't even think they were born when his whole enterprise came about. I mean, he was 40 something at that time, 42. They're like, no, we don't know who you are. Then that's when they were really scared. She didn't know if they were going to end up, you know, in the hills somewhere and murdered. So she called 911, I think it was approximately 14 times. And because of the area, it didn't go through. They ended up through these gates. And that's when the Cadillac stopped and one of them was trying to get out and the door was locked and they couldn't actually even get out even though they were in the front of his driveway. And he said, well, I'll call you a taxi, come inside. I want to show you my house and I want to show you I have a bunch of really cool Lamborghinis or something.
There's a lot of dispute about what you just heard, plus what happened from here. Joe said that one of the girls did indeed have cell phone service at his house, that other people were present, and that they could have left any time. But here's what Christina alleges ultimately happened.
All of a sudden, Joe comes out of nowhere and just grabs the main battery victim by the back of her head, her hair, and slams her head four times down on the tile, just telling her to, like, just shut up. And she's just yelling to stop. She's screaming at this point. He's just banging her head on the floor. He lets go, and then the other girls come out. She's just stunned. She did not see it coming. He came behind her. He said, get out, all of you, get out. You know, I call the taxi, he's coming. She tries to call 911 in between this, which it did pick up, and then it dropped again. So then the taxi shows up within a few minutes, and then they get in a taxi. And then that's when Joe comes out of his house, you know, comes down the driveway and says, don't you call the police. Don't you do anything. Don't call the police. I own LAPD. The taxi takes off. She's still trying to call 911. And I actually went through once they got down the hill from Bel Air. It picked up on somewhere near Hollywood Boulevard.
What's your emergency?
She said, I need LAPD. I need the police to come to my car. I think it's parked on Cahuenga Boulevard. The police show up at her vehicle. The officer is like, you need to go to the hospital. You all need to go to the hospital. She didn't know if she was going to live or not or have internal bleeding. She was very scared.
After what happened with those women, Joe was charged with assault and false imprisonment, even though he denied the allegations. But that spring, the case went to trial in Los Angeles. And when the verdict came down, Joe lost it. A day after the conviction, he gave a video interview to The Hollywood Reporter.
Just because a jury is mentally retarded and jealous, you know, that jury should be shot dead by a firing squad.
Lovely. Joe had been found guilty of 3 counts of false imprisonment, one of dissuading a witness from reporting, and one of assault. And now he was going to be sentenced.
We said, okay, well, he's got to show up for his hearing. And he never showed up. He's fled to Mexico.
That's right. Joe ducked out of jail time and the money he owed Steve Wynn, and he went to Mexico.
So then we had to put a warrant in the system. The warrant was $500,000 for his arrest. After that, we never heard from the lawyer, nothing. He's just out of pocket, left.
The warrant is under seal.
I don't think anybody knows that he has a warrant out. I really don't. He is still a wanted person. This just doesn't go away. When you have a warrant, it just doesn't fade into nowhere.
And Christina says it could have consequences for Joe if he comes back to the U.S.
He can come to the U.S., but if he's driving a vehicle and he's speeding and an officer pulls him over, you run someone's name, the warrant pops up and they can take him.
Christina is confident that that will happen eventually.
He'll be stopped one day because he does not obey the rules and he is going to be caught one day. I know it. It's just a matter of time.
Stories continue to surface about his alleged mistreatment of women. Last year, in a show about Joe on TNT, a woman named Janelle alleged that he raped her after she was filmed for Girls Gone Wild. She claims that he and his cameraman took her into a small bedroom with a double bed, purple sheets. She alleges the cabinets were filled with lube, condoms, baby oil, a DVD called How to Be a Player, and sex toys.
And him and the camera guy said, go in the drawer right here on the left of the bed. And there is objects in there that we want you to touch yourself with. But I kind of just went with it because now I felt pressured. I used the objects and I touched myself with them.
Some of these details might sound familiar to you. Someone is finding themselves on a bed, in front of a camera, with a sex toy. They don't want to be there. They feel intimidated. But in this story, things are alleged to escalate even further.
I didn't give my consent that night, and he totally raped me. And then he got off of me like I was garbage.
Although Janelle took her story public, both in this testimony and to LA Times reporter Claire Hoffman, she never took any legal action that we could find. It's not uncommon in cases of sexual assault and rape. But Joe denies the allegation. Still, it's not the only allegation against him. He's been accused of domestic violence against the mother of his children, who left Mexico for the United States. He denies this. And Joe? He's believed to still be in Mexico, where he has an amazing home, almost like a resort, called Casa Aramara. It's white sand beaches, palm trees waving in the breeze, jacuzzis, and pools. It seems like a honeypot hotel for his celeb friends. Has long been a favorite with the Kardashians. In 2021, the Casa Aramara Instagram account posted a picture of Kim Kardashian enjoying the tennis court. Kourtney Kardashian once even wrote in the web guest book, "I have never been to any other place in the world that is as peaceful, private, safe, and relaxing." Except Joe is still down there being Joe. While I was working on this story, I wrote him on Instagram to ask for an interview with a list of questions. He wrote back that he categorically denied everything I had asked. Then he said he considered just the asking of the questions harassment and in violation of Instagram's policies. He said that if I wrote him again, he would have me banned from Instagram. I wasn't surprised Joe didn't want to talk to me. He shut a lot of doors in his life. At the end of his message, he wrote with an exclamation point, "Goodbye, Vanessa. Goodbye, Joe." Infamous, which continues next week, is a production of Campside Media and Sony Music Entertainment. It's created, executive produced, and hosted by me, Vanessa Gregoriadis, and Gabriel Sherman. Shoshi Shmulevitz is our managing producer and editor. Rajiv Gola is our senior producer. And Lily Houston Smith, Garrett Graham, and Grace Heerman are our associate producers. This episode of Boy Gone Wild was written for audio by Natalie Robomed and me. It was sound designed by Alistair Sherman, mixed by David Devereaux, and recorded by Ewan Bly Tremuin. John Daly is the voice of Joe Francis. Campside Media's executive producers are Josh Dean, Adam Hoff, Matt Scherer. Thanks to PJ Vogt and to Campside's operations team, Doug Slaywin, Aaliyah Papes, and Destiny Dingle. If you're enjoying learning about Girls Gone Wild, please rate and review the show. It is so helpful. See you next week.